So, Sadie, as you know, I love to ride my bike everywhere. How do you get around the city?
Well, when I lived closer to work, I was all about my bicycle. And while I'm a huge fan of the trains and public transport, I have to say I spend a lot more time driving and stuck in traffic these days.
Ugh, I know. Hot take. Traffic sucks. But is there anything math can do to help us out here?
It turns out, yes. Today's guest math expert is a traffic engineer, and she walked me through how adding autonomous vehicles, that's self-driving cars, to the mix of traffic leads to some complicated math. But also by adding those self-driving cars, we can actually reduce stop-and-go traffic. To be honest, I was so tempted to start today's episode by making a crack about Tesla or Musk, but in the interest of not getting trolled online, I think we should sidestep that whole thing.
Oh, don't worry. I'm all for avoiding talking about him. He does not need any more attention.
Yeah. So let's get to the meat of this episode and meet Sharon D. She's an associate professor at Columbia University in the Department of Civil Engineering and Engineering Mechanics, and she has a lot to say about self-driving cars and how we human drivers interact with them.
So first, it may take forever to eventually have all the cars as self-driving. And the second, this makes the traffic stage, I think, is the most challenging but the fun part to study.
But before we get into the nitty-gritty of autonomous vehicles, also called AVs, we should probably remind the listeners who we are.
I'm Ian Martin.
And I'm Sadie Witkowski.
And you're listening to Carry the Two, the podcast where we promise we won't talk about you-know-who.
You mean the podcast where we talk about all the ways we use mathematical and statistical research to understand the world around us. Ian and I are a somewhat unlikely duo.
I don't know what you mean. A high school choir teacher and a neuroscientist talking about math?
Well, I don't know. Can you still find the area under a curve?
Maybe if you gave me the equation. The last time I looked at my notebook from Calc, I had no idea what any of it meant.
Anyways, I asked Ian to join me on this MC podcast because I knew his curiosity and snark would be the perfect balance against all this research.
Just like in my dating life, I lead with my personality.
Yeah, all personality, no staying on topic. kidding.
Rude.
Okay, but really, let's get back to Sharon and her work on AVs.
Okay, but you mentioned we were going to talk about how we human drivers interact with self-driving cars.
Yeah, mine is focused on mixed traffic scenario. So when humans and the self-driving cars interact with each other. So I think this is the space that we really need to pay attention to.
Maybe I'm missing something, but why is this what we need to worry about? Isn't it just one more car on the road with an inattentive driver?
You would think that, but it turns out we human drivers aren't exactly courteous of AVs. Like, Sharon showed me this video of an AV with its blinker on trying to merge into the exit lane, and all the other drivers around them are just ignoring the blinker and blocking them off. A human driver might start to merge anyways, with the assumption that people will just give them space, but not the autonomous vehicle. I'm sure it was frustrating for the person in the car, but honestly, it was also kind of funny to witness.
Yeah, in my head, it's just like a robot going, no, after you, no, after you.
But like humans don't do that, even though you're supposed to do that with a, you know, you see someone with a blinker trying to get over. Half the time people speed up and are like, no, you can go behind me. So is it like that kind of interaction that is so different?
Yeah, exactly. So I always use one example. Basically, I think that's happened in the real world, captured by some driver and uploaded to the Twitter. So that's exactly the scenario you described. And so basically, that Waymo car couldn't merge eventually and has to get off the ramp. So yeah, this will never be seen in human drivers because of our, I think, adaptive and cognitive capabilities.
So Sharon's saying humans might just not use their blinker and start to move over, assuming the other drivers will just make space?
Exactly. It is such a mess.
So I think what currently the state of art of autonomous vehicles, they drive in a very different way from human drivers. So that's when these awkward things happen. And people really want to know how the self-driving car, if they are designed as a just a mechanical machine that move based on some algorithm in output by the computer, and then those computers may not be able to handle this emerging traffic scenarios, and also may not be able to understand the human skills. So then how we can avoid those kind of awkward, socially awkward scenarios, and even it, which can cause, I think, more severe outcomes or damages to either car or the humans.
Well, if there's such a mess, are we going to talk about the math or the algorithms running these cars?
Well, unfortunately, I think most of that is actually proprietary information held by Waymo or Google or Tesla. And anyways, Sharon is less interested in the choices of the individual cars than in modeling the overall system of the autonomous vehicles and human drivers interacting.
Because as a traffic engineer, I'm more interested in the collective behavior of a group of cars instead of just how single cars are navigating. So that's why we use this game theory that model a system, transportation ecosystem full of different agents. Because traffic actually is kind of a little different from other maybe ecosystems because it has hierarchical stakeholders. We have higher level like policymakers, lawyers, and middle level maybe car manufacturers, and the lower level is the pedestrian, the cars, motorcycle. We have multimodal travel modes, so it's all shared this limited road resources. So when I do the research, I take this ecosystem as a whole and want to see, okay, different stakeholders have different objective and they are self-interested game players. So at the equilibrium, how they would behave and how this equilibrium state would inform policy making and also urban planning.
Yeah, game theory sounds familiar, but I'm honestly probably thinking about the Mahjong Singh and Crazy Rich Asians. We've talked about it on the podcast before, right?
Yeah, I should hope this all sounds familiar. Sharon's work shares some of that same framework that we talked about with Merwan in episode 3, the one on 5G, and with Dario in episode 2, where we covered honeybees. Remember mean field games and game theory and the three-body problem?
Yeah, I think I remember making some joke about mean field games in middle school PE, but I think I do remember. Maybe you can just remind me to, like, help the listeners, you know?
Oh, of course. How about I let Sharon take this one?
So basic game theory describes a world where there are a lot of agents. They are intelligent, or we call the game players. And each agent has their own objective to optimize. And they either compete or cooperate or coordinate over these limited resources. And at an equilibrium, so everyone's happy with what they got. So that's the idea of game theory.
Right. This is like the prisoner's dilemma.
Yeah, but in this case, instead of turning in a fellow criminal, it's all about how drivers act against each other in traffic.
And also these agents, they are more like a self-motivated. So they want to, say, maximize their own benefit. They, for example, finding the shortest path or fastest path to get to destination. But from policymakers' perspective, they want to coordinate each other so that they can achieve a social benefit. So there's this conflict between self-interest agent and also the centralized agent. So that also brings up the challenge, how, given everyone behaves selfish, how can you guide the system towards a social optimum?
Oh, I was not ready for this to be a metaphor about creating a better society. Since I bike everywhere, most of my experience in a car is wringing my hands in the back of a Lyft, hoping I make it to the airport on time.
Oh, man, every time. But I think this is true for all drivers. We're all driven towards our own goals. We don't care that other drivers are late to their dentist appointments. We have places to be.
Oh, very true. Although, whenever someone is being particularly, let's say, bold in their driving, I find it helps my anger to just assume someone's in labor or having diarrhea.
Okay, so Sharon's solution to thinking about the social optimum is to just ignore the driver, or more accurately, ignore the problem at the driver level and focus on the big picture.
We start from this microscopic scale. We model each individual car and assume they have their own objective function to optimize. And then when the number of the agents or the population become large, then we can scale up this model to a macroscopic population level, and then transform it from individual car to the entire traffic flow. And then we will just use traffic states that we usually use, like travel time or travel speed, traffic density, and also traffic volume or capacity to describe the performance of the models. Yeah, but to reach that level, we have to start from when individual cars driving, the individual vehicle speed, and their headway with the neighboring cars and their speed and their travel time to start with.
Just like in mean field games, you're really looking at all these individuals together making decisions.
Yeah, it's almost like treating traffic as like a liquid.
Oh, I love that, especially because it invites metaphor. You can be like, oh, darling, the traffic is rather viscous this morning.
Sure. Anyways, traffic is like a liquid in that we're looking at rates of flow and how the system is changing. And this is how we get to the core math of this episode. Partial differential equations, aka PDEs.
Sadie, you know I have no idea what a partial differential equation is. I don't even know what a full differential equation is.
Well, the technical view of a partial differential equation is that it's an equation that describes a relation between partial derivatives of a multivariable function.
I know what all those words mean separately.
Yeah, it sounds confusing. I'm really trying to steer us away from just reading equations aloud on the podcast.
I mean, secretly, I would love that, even if no one else would.
Yeah, right. I'm still not going to do that. Let's just say that there are full subclasses of PDEs, and we'll probably get into those in later episodes, since partial differential equations are core to physics and engineering fields like thermodynamics, general relativity, and quantum mechanics. In Sharon's work as a traffic engineer, she's really using PDEs to model traffic flow from a bird's eye view, almost as if you were a news anchor reporting on the traffic from a helicopter.
It basically is used to describe a dynamical system that depends on not only time, but also space. And the reason we use here is because we can treat the traffic as a fluid. So they flow like water or other fluid. And then when they evolve in time and space, then we can basically characterize the traffic flow using traffic density or traffic volume, etc. And then that's when we use PDE to describe how these traffic states will change over time.
Okay, let me see if I can summarize partial differential equations.
Go for it.
The way I'm envisioning it is kind of like the math to describe how a river is moving. Like, there are a lot of variables that affect the way it moves, like the incline of the terrain, its shape and direction, the number of rocks or other obstacles. So the partial differential equations explain how one area of the river is flowing faster than another. Is that close?
Yeah, that's actually not too far off. PDEs essentially explain how things are changing at different rates in a system, like why traffic might be slow because people are rubbernecking at an accident, but then it speeds back up once you pass the site of the crash. And like a liquid, Or maybe it's even easier to explain as a gas. The traffic flows at different rates and cars can either be bumper to bumper or spaced out when they're moving along quickly or slowly. So PDEs describe all these changing variables so we can understand the traffic as a whole.
Okay, I get the point of needing to understand traffic and not on a driver-by-driver basis. But how does this function when you have self-driving cars, especially when they're mixed with human-driven cars like you mentioned earlier?
Good catch. Why don't we take a short break and then we can get into the ring road study with autonomous vehicles?
Oh, that sounds like Mario Kart, like when you're playing against your friends and the computer. I'm excited and also ready to learn because I'm terrible at video games.
If you're getting a lot out of the important research shared on our show, there's another University of Chicago Podcast Network show that you should check out. It's called Capital Isn't. Capital Isn't uses the latest economic thinking to zero in on the ways capitalism is, and more often isn't, working today. From the debate over how to distribute a vaccine to the morality of a wealth tax, Capital Isn't clearly explains how capitalism can go wrong and what we can do about it. Listen to Capital Isn't, part of the award-winning University of Chicago Podcast Network.
And we're back.
And I'm ready to spend 20 minutes customizing Luigi's car only to lose to the computer and also all of my friends.
You're really taking the Mario Kart reference seriously, huh?
Listen, it's the only video game I know how to play. But I guess we can get back on topic. Before the break, you said we were going to talk about how the math rubber hits the road with an experiment.
Right. So Sharon's group at Columbia uses PDEs, that's partial differential equations as a reminder, to model how traffic flows and then how that flow is disrupted or changes based on adding self-driving cars, aka autonomous vehicles, or AVs for short.
So she wasn't the one who did the actual experiment with real cars?
No, it was actually done by a group of Google researchers in Arizona. Here, let me set up the scenario for you.
I think there are many ways why AV can smooth traffic. There's one field experiment done by a group of researchers in Arizona. So basically they have a ring road. So it's one AV and all other cars are human-driven cars. So that AV can adjust its speed accordingly. So that the cars behind are basically limited by their action limited by this AV. So that's why that somehow, because people cannot drive freely.
So as Sharon was saying, at this test bed, they have a paved ring track, kind of like a much smaller NASCAR track, but with one lane. And it has 21 regular human-driven cars and one AV. Previous research using just the human-driven cars basically showed that we're really imperfect at regulating our speed. So when you're playing follow the leader on this ring road, you eventually develop stop-and-go traffic.
So we're always like trying to zoom up behind the person in front of us, but then hit the brakes and that causes problems?
Yeah, we make our own traffic jams just by the way we drive. So the Arizona researchers added an AV, and they calibrated it to keep even spacing between the car in front and behind it.
So what did they find?
So the rule of thumb we found is the slower, the faster. So if AVs can mitigate the traffic speed to not be to go speed up too fast, actually that will smooth the traffic. That's when the traffic is, the stop and go will not happen.
Oh, so adding only one AV affected the driving of all the other 21 human drivers?
Yeah, because the AV was programmed to keep space both in front and behind it, the computer never let the car get into this pattern of stop and go traffic and basically smoothed out the driving for all the other cars in the circle. So this real world experiment basically proved the math correct. And in the real-world study, they also showed that this improvement led to both lower fuel consumption and a shorter driving time, not just for the AVs, but for all of the vehicles in the ring road.
It's cool that Sharon's mathematical modeling was born out of this study. I know she's more on the mathy side, but her work independently verifying this idea using mathematical modeling is a neat example of science coming together.
I think it's to that we found out AV can definitely stabilize or smoothen traffic flow. A different research actually use different methods, and it's also validated in real world. So it's one definite testimony to show why we need AVAs in the future.
I guess the question is, will this translate to a more complex traffic scenario?
Yeah, it's a proof of concept, but the real world has a lot more factors. Even Sharon admits that the math alone gets much more complex when you try to add more variables.
So we can solve, say, a large number of agents on a simple ring road or a long highway or a small network, transportation network. So I think the maximum size we are trying now is, we call it the mid size, like has 10 nodes and maybe 20 links. So that's the best we can do so far. But we want to go beyond that. So we are looking for some machine learning method.
Oh, wait, what are the nodes and links? This is kind of starting to sound like those plastic Tinker Toys I loved growing up.
Well, if you think of a map of roadways, then each node is the intersection of some kind. And then the links are the roads connecting those nodes. So Sharon's work so far can't really go beyond a tiny town's map in terms of modeling traffic flow.
Yeah, 20 roads is a small number. That wouldn't even cover half of my commute to school.
And just remember, this just includes cars. You and I both commute a lot by bicycle or walk from trains, and that adds a whole lot of complications.
Yeah, I don't think AVs will help keep me from getting doored on my bike.
No, but don't worry. I did ask Sharon to start including us cyclists in her traffic models. But we have to recognize it's an added complication.
But the challenge is because it's hard to predict the cyclist and the pedestrian movement. I think that's the challenge. But we want to go in that direction. But to do that, first you have to have a much better model to capture the movement of pedestrian cyclists and also predict their behavior in the next 5 seconds.
I will have you know that I am a very predictable cyclist. I love rules.
Maybe you and I are, but cyclists as a class just use roadways differently than cars. So they need to spend more time figuring out how to mathematically model us at intersections like stop signs, for example.
Oh my God, do you think I should be a model? Thank you. Wow. Okay. But really, I'm glad that Sharon won't be out of a job anytime soon.
Yeah, considering robots haven't taken over the transportation industry, I think her traffic modeling career is safe. And in the meantime, Columbia University, where Sharon works, is setting up a really cool testbed to collect some real-world data.
So we have a real-world testbed just near on campus or by campus. And basically, researchers already have deployed those wireless communication nodes and some cameras. And we try to use the data collected from the camera, all these we call the Internet of Things sensors, to better describe traffic and better model it and predict and also manage the urban traffic.
It's a little freaky that there are like sensors everywhere.
They aren't tracking individuals so much as looking at the rate of traffic and flow, things like that. But maybe we should come back to a discussion about data privacy in a later episode.
Wait, is there math behind privacy? I guess, stay tuned. You know, when you said we would be talking about self-driving cars, I really thought we'd be getting into stuff like the algorithms that decide when a car stops.
Well, we went for a much more holistic view on this one, talking about traffic as a whole rather than the local decision makers. But that makes sense when so much of this first season has been about things like mean field games.
Well, are there any specific directions of Sharon's work that we should keep an eye out for?
Funny you should mention that. I asked her about the future of self-driving cars and autonomous vehicles, and this is what she had to say.
So first, it may take forever to eventually have all the cars as self-driving. And the second, this makes the traffic stage, I think, is the most challenging, but the fun part to study. because there are also a lot of uncertainties, like the legal regulation side, and also how humans may even evolve their behavior. So when there are more AVs are put into the road, so human may behave differently from what we behave nowadays. So these uncertainties will make the research more exciting.
That's so cool. I love that her research is focused on the impact of AVs on the larger system and on the people who are still driving their own cars rather than the few people who can afford self-driving cars.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously, Sharon agrees. She really cares about the big picture, even if it's not where the car industry is right now.
However, that time, most of the resources are all focused in industry. People spend tons of money to test their self-driving technologies. For researchers, we have very little knowledge about how this technology can transform transportation system and impact traffic congestion. So that's why I think it's very important to have a neutral perspective to better understand if in the future, every car is replaced by autonomous vehicle, what the traffic would be like. Will it create more congestion? If yes, how can we basically prevent that from happening ahead of time?
I'm just hoping her work will help improve my long commute into the office. Shout out to Lakeshore Drive rush hour traffic.
That's why you bike. So to recap, today we talked about how engineer and researcher Sharon D uses math to model traffic flow and how autonomous vehicles alter traffic patterns.
Specifically, she uses a family of equations called partial differential equations, or PDEs, to understand how dynamic flow of traffic changes.
And we just barely touched on Mead Field bottles once again.
Yeah, before finally wrapping with an example of how a real-world experiment gave the same results as her mathematical model. Namely, that an AV helped smooth traffic flow and reduce stop-and-go congestion.
And now that we're done recording, I'm going to hop on my bike and head home for another hour and a half.
But don't go yet. First, we need to remind our listeners to check out our show notes in the podcast description for more on Sharon's work and further resources about autonomous vehicles and traffic engineering. We'll even include a link to her presentation here at IMSI for one of our workshops.
If you want to learn even more about math and statistics in our world, subscribe to the show. You can also leave a review on Apple Podcasts, which will really help us spread the word about Carry the Two.
And be sure to check us out online at our homepage, imsi.institute. We're also on Twitter at imsi_institute, as well as Instagram at imsi.institute. And that's IMSI spelled I-M-S-I.
And do you have a burning math question? Maybe you have an idea for a story on how mathematics and statistics connect with the world around us. Send us an email with your idea.
You can send your feedback, ideas, and more to sadiewitt@imsi.institute. That's S-A-D-I-E-W-I-T at I-M-S-I.institute.
We'd also like to thank our audio engineer, Tyler Dammy, for his production on the show. And music is by Blue Dot Sessions.
Lastly, Carry the Two is made possible by the Institute for Mathematical and Statistical Innovation, located on the gorgeous campus of the University of Chicago. And we're supported by the National Science Foundation and the University of Chicago.
And I'd like to let all the listeners know that Sadie had no idea a Beyonce album came out today.
So. Ooh. Go ahead and talk.
You won't break my soul.
Nice. Okay, I think these look good.
Beep, beep.
Toot, toot. Hey. Beep, beep.